Hey! If you're listening to that music, you know that this is, well, it's actually a fifth Friday of the month this time. This is a special edition of Spiritual Perspectives. This is looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. And as with every edition of Spiritual Perspectives, you're invited to join us here in the program just by calling in at 415-543-8255 if you have a question or a perspective that you'd like to add into our conversation. This is our conversation, and it includes you. I also want to point out that you can catch us not only on KEST 1450 AM broadcast, but you can catch us around the world on KESTradio.com, and that this program will be archived on lifeinsights.net. Probably have it up by later today, I'm hoping. If not, then by Monday. So happy, happy last day of 2011 to you. Boy, I'm almost saying 2012 already. So happy last weekday of 2011. We're glad to have you with us. And this morning we have a very special guest. I've gotten to talk with our guest before. We had a wonderful conversation, so he's back. This is an international speaker on spiritual healing based in Christian Science. He's traveled across the world and talked to all types of audiences, ranging from churches and universities to medical schools to drug treatment centers and even prison facilities. In his mid-20s, our guest was healed of a serious drug habit by reading Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture by Mary Baker Eddy. We'll mention that book again. Three times cover to cover. I am awed with that. That's impressive. And his healing was life-altering as he found an entirely new purpose and direction. Before he entered a full-time ministry of teaching and healing, had run small businesses in New York City, but since 85, he's devoted his life to sharing the healing power of prayer to transform individual lives. So for over 25 years, he's continued his work as a Christian Science practitioner and an authorized teacher and a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship. An international expert speaking on spiritual healing. So everybody, I would like to introduce you to none other than John Quincy Adams III. Everybody, this is John. John, this is everybody.
Hi, Scout.
Good morning.
A great introduction. Thank you so much.
I love that.
To be here this morning.
As I recall from previous conversations, you really are like, you know, direct lineage right down from famous Americans, right?
Well, I don't think it's direct, no. If there's a lineage, it's an indirect lineage, and we hook up somewhere across the pond, I think.
So you're sort of the great-great-great-great-great nephew twice removed or something.
Well, I don't know. I know our generations go back around 10 in this country, and so I guess that traces back, but I think it'd probably need to be 15, 16, 17 generations if it was a direct connection. So, but thanks for the interest.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We're in charge of a new revolution today anyway, aren't we? It's a revolution of mind, of thinking, and so it's fun to be in the vanguard of that now.
I love, you know, one of the wonderful things I'm watching going on is I track the world and I track where we are. And we're noticing that the concepts of being connected spiritually and even the concepts of spiritual healing, spiritual connection, there being a deeper element to us, those are showing up in more and more popular television shows, unpopular television shows, the popular literature that's floating around. There's a real clear cultural awakening of there being more to us than just that surface. And that's right online with what we want to talk about this morning, because you've been speaking around the world on spiritual rebirth and transforming your life. So let me just start with that backwards part. In the notes that I have, and they're sort of personal, but the notes I have, you did a serious transformation of your life by reading Science and Health and Keys to the Scripture three times through. That's impressive in itself. But you did a serious change of your world from trying to be an actor with a drug habit to shifting your life and transforming your life. Can you give us sort of a thumbnail of that steps of transformation, John?
Well, you know, you focused on one. I think there's been several in my life. Just to steer away from that thought, but I wonder how many folks there who are listening to us this morning have had that kind of a transforming experience, a real revelation, a life-changing experience in their lives. Mm-hmm. Something that you might refer to as a dramatic change of thought based on some kind of an upheaval or a jolt to the senses, or that caused the individual to question everything about himself or herself, who yeah. one really is, where one really is, and what one's purpose is. And I think that that's what happened to me mm-hmm. when I had this this experience. I was in my mid-20s. You know, I'd floated around. I'd been in and out of school. I had been to acting school. I had, you know, just sort of searched things out. But what really engaged me was drugs at that time in my life. And so I was fully involved in the entire lifestyle with the travel. And I had, at one point, a chemist making hallucinogens and selling them in glass vials at 100 in a vial, and
So this was a fairly serious practice you had.
It was, and you know, there were a lot of guys that were engaged in this. I certainly was not unique in this, but at that point in my life, I really came to an understanding. There were three incidents that occurred that sort of jolted me. One. I was in a friend's house in the Midwest, and all of a sudden two narcotics agents come into the room. They come through the door off of a fire escape and point at me and tell me to stay there or follow them. And they had run toward the front of the house and inside because there was a young lady who had taken hallucinogen, was out on the roof, and they thought there was some fear that she might jump. And so they were there to save a life, but at the same time recognized me, pointed at me, and when they came in through the fire escape, the minute they ran around the corner, I ran down the fire escape and on my way away. And then a day later, of course, the newspaper headlines were university co-eds busted for drugs, and it was a sad event for several of those people. But mm-hmm. with me, I always questioned, why was I freed of that particular experience? And then a week later, in O'Hare Airport, I had another confrontation with a drug acquaintance that could have gotten really out of hand, and I withdrew from it. And I thought, you know, that was a wise step I took there. And finally, a day later, I was in the car with my wife and a new baby and my sister in the back seat. We went through a light, and a fella hit us broadside and really totaled the car, but thank God no one was hurt. But I looked over, and it was before seat belts or before children were in car required to be in, you know, in their own infant seats. And I saw my wife doing the very best she could to save our daughter from hitting her head against the dashboard or falling to the floor. She was just a little infant, and that really changed my life.
Nice.
I began to think, gosh, you know, not only am I a result of my own thinking.
Yes.
Which really was startling to me. I'm also having a direct impact the way I act on other people's lives.
Nice catch.
And those two things really just jolted me. And from that point forward, I thought, you know, I need to find out more about Christian Science. I'd been raised in the teachings. I had moved away from them. And my aunt had said, Johnny, why don't you just, you know, here's the book, go to church. You know, I'd gone to my grandmother just to go back just briefly. After this had happened, my grandmother was a Christian Science practitioner, and that's an individual who heals through prayer. There's no laying on of hands. There's no mixing of medication along with prayer. It's simply a holy communion that takes place between the healer, the patient, and God. It's an incredibly spiritual moment, and that brings real change in a person's life.
Yes.
Well, when I went to see her, I told her what my situation was, and she said, Johnny, she said, why don't you, have you read Science and Health? Do you remember that's the book? Do you have a copy of that? That's the book you used to study in the Sunday school alongside the Bible. And I rather incredulously looked at her and replied, no, why would I have that book? You know, that's how far away I was from a scout.
There's no chemistry formulas in that book.
Amazing. And she went into her study room and brought back her own copy and put it in my hands. And she said, Johnny, read this book. It'll change your life. Well, when she gave me the book, Scout, I was looking and I was thumbing through it, and I thought, my Lord, this is a thick book. And I said, I don't have a choice. If I accept it, I've got to read it, and I really can't put it back in my grandmother's hands and say no thank you. Yeah. So I took the book, I went back to New York, I read it through three times, and I had a complete transforming experience. My life changed. I never took another drug. I disappeared from that lifestyle, and I began to focus on employment and school. And from that point forward, I've just become more and more fully active in the Christian Science movement.
You know, let me just toss this one out, John, because we've not talked about this before. I do a workshop that I call Intuition, Addiction, and Sensitivity, which seems to offend a lot of people that I would dare put those together. But one of the things I notice is, for most of us, when we find an addictive substance that's addictive for us, whatever it might be, it's because it actually sort of shortcuts us into that feeling that some deep part of us knows, that feeling that we would have if we were spiritually connected. So in a lot of cases, I think that addictive factor is actually a spiritual pursuit. It's just that we inadvertently stumble across a shortcut and that becomes our of choice. But we've got histories of like Ram Dass and many others where they shifted from their of choice into that inner pursuit to make that connection. So it's a piece of material I've developed and worked on for a while, but I just figured I'd toss it out to you. You've got a background. You've talked in prisons. You've watched people that have had these kinds of serious issues. You've talked in rehab facilities. What do you think about that? That it may be the thing that makes it of choice is it's a first introduction to what that deeper spiritual part of ourselves might feel like if we actually took a real path to get there.
Well, that's a very interesting correlation. I found that the reason I initially took drugs was I was curious about it. I didn't know what the full implications of were going to come from that, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But I also was after the truth behind them. I had been raised in the teachings of Christian Science, so I had a pretty clear understanding of what I was expecting from them. And that was that, okay, how truthful are you? And once I discovered the truth of the drug, in other words, that, this isn't really going to take me anywhere lasting.
Right.
I laid it down.
Right.
And it went all the way from pot right up through the hard drugs, right through LSD and the other hallucinogens. Once I realized, gee, this is only going to give me temporary satisfaction within the human realm. Right. It's never going to lift me out of this limited sense. I'm going to need to develop my spiritual sense in order to do that. And once I came to that understanding, it sort of delivered me right into the arms of Christian Science. And when it did, I began to realize, gee, I've got to cultivate spiritual sense. I've got it. It's a quality within me.
Bingo.
But now I've got to exercise it through prayer, through meditation, through practicing the truths consistently on a day-to-day basis that will change my life and give me purpose for being.
You've touched right into every single Spiritual Perspectives program that we do. This is one question I love to bring into the discussion. John, when you use the verb prayer, what does that mean to you? What's your experience of it? What do you do with it? How do you find it? What is that word for you? Not for a generalization, but for you personally.
Well, prayer to me, a lot of the time, I mean, it does act in any number of ways, but one of the ways that it acts for me is exercising an understanding of recognizing a power greater than me, and then handing myself over to that power.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it's surrendering and recognizing that the relationship that I have with what we call in Christian Science infinite mind or divine love, that relationship becomes more and more substantial through this communion that takes place. And it is almost like a divine parent, where you may refer to God as father or mother or in a very loving way. And in so doing, I surrender myself to that relationship. And I share, I'll cast my burdens or I'll share my deeper concerns. And I'll seek quietly to listen to what God is guiding me to understand about this, or is literally telling me where to go or how to address the circumstance. Mm-hmm. And really, honestly, I have found that much of prayer is listening, that it's not so much informing God as much as it is, Father, give me the strength, give me the understanding, give me the humility to meet and to master this moment, Father.
So would, if you were going to share a structure, your own personal structure of prayer, and I certainly know that mine has developed over the years in what that word has meant to me and even how I interact with it, more so than it being a rote repetition of a regular metered rhyme that we learn in childhood, what would you share with people if they wanted to play with this idea? How do you go seek that state of open listening, and then what do you do?
Well, I think first I know that I need to be by myself mostly. Not always. You can pray in the middle of events and also with people around you. But in the quietude of a moment where you have the ability to listen, and I'm not talking about externally, I'm talking about internally, mm-hmm. to listen quietly to what's coming and to yield yourself over, as I said, to an infinite source of good, that you're really just coming right to the feet of that power, and I say that metaphorically, that you're just saying, well, I'm here, I love you, I know that you love me, and I need to know more fully what you're realizing for me, Father, right now, because infinite mind is knowing everything there is to know about each of us all the time. In a very real sense, God, infinite mind, is realizing us consistently all the time. And if there's anything that needs to be adjusted or restored or changed, bringing our thought into accord with the way God is realizing us in a perfect light will oftentimes regenerate our thinking and cause us to rethink about these different problems that have been vexing us or draining our spiritual vitality. So I guess I've sort of walked you through a little bit of a practice of my own thinking.
Yes.
About the way I bring this about. And, of mm-hmm. course, there's no one single way to do this. But, boy, you know, I think you'd agree with me, Scout, when you're sensing the presence of God, there's nothing like it, because you know at that point you have total dominion, that God is empowering you to realize humbly all that he's knowing for you and all those who your thought rests upon.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. There are several. You put big chunks of information in a very small sentence, John. I'm going to loop back to that. I do want to just take a second, because I want to express appreciation. The First Church of Christ Science Mill Valley has brought the program this morning, and I really appreciate them. They extend the invitation if you'd like to join them in Mill Valley Sunday mornings at 10. They also have a Wednesday evening testimonial service at 7:30. Everyone is welcome. But they invite you to find other Christian Science reading rooms in the area. If the areas and the directions of this kind of thought are interesting to you, Christian Science churches are a resource. And they also have spirituality.com and christianscience.com, where articles and more talks are archived. So, John, I'm just jumping back real quick.
May I just say brief thing about the members of the Mill Valley Church?
Oh, yes, please.
Such a loving, welcoming group of people. You'll just feel so embraced and cared for if you take some time to go over there for that hour. And also, they have a Wednesday testimony meeting during the midweek also, where mm-hmm. folks can come and hear about healings. So thank you for letting me share that.
Mm-hmm. You bet. So this was a phrase you said, and I'm going to paraphrase it. God, infinite mind, realizing us in a perfect light. Now, I know you are so used to those terms that you know the depth of it. So let me just take this apart a little bit. Mm-hmm. God, infinite mind, go.
Well, when you think of mind, generally we think of intelligence. And if you think of mind in infinite terms as compared to just human reasoning, then you've taken off the caps. You've entirely removed the limitations, because infinite mind thinks only in infinite terms. And when we think that of God realizing us in infinite terms, then we have no no starting point and no conclusion. We've simply always coexisted within that mind's knowledge of us.
Ooh, say that again. Just say that same thing again, because they're in their car. They don't have a rewind button. Hit it again.
Okay. When one thinks of infinite mind, in other words, that which thinks only in infinite terms, and then relates oneself to that, that infinite mind is knowing us in an infinite light, then it has always known us. We never had a starting point, and we don't have a conclusion. So God's realization of us restores us, guides us, because God is continually realizing us. And when we begin to define ourselves in infinite terms, as I said, it takes all the limits off. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change the relationship so much as it does. In other words, when we think of ourselves in terms of health, health is a condition of mind. It's not actually a material state. So health is harmony, and it's an inherent part of our very nature. We've always had it. We're always going to have it. It's infinite. Income has no starting point, no conclusion, so there's no limitations on income. The same thing with love, the same thing with purpose, the same thing with identity, that it's always been and it always will be. And when we begin to realize ourselves in the same way that God, infinite mind, is realizing us, well, this opens up visions of thought and new opportunities that bring restoration. Mm-hmm. And new ways of glorifying God, or new ways of expressing good.
I grew up with an anthropomorphized vision of God, and I don't know that that was actually what was intended to be transmitted, but I grew up picturing an old dude with a Neptunian long white beard sitting in a huge chair, and some certain people, according to the creed, got to be in his right hand, and other people apparently were in his left hand, and if you really ticked him off, he was sort of like a five-year-old. You're never going to be my you're never going to be my best friend again. Be gone with you, and so forth. And I've sort of shifted out of that picture of God as some old dude with a long white beard, to where I've been doing some meditation on what I grew up and learned as the Lord's Prayer, because I've been wanting to hear the message in it. And I've been playing with this one, John, and I'd just like to share it here, that I think there's a tiny translation error. I grew up with the phrase, "Our Father who art in heaven." And I'm thinking it was a small glitch of translation, that it's actually "Our Father who art heaven." Who is that infinite mind? Who is all?
Yeah, and that God is all in his allness.
Yeah.
You see, so you've touched on something very, very good here. And I think it just to get a bit theological here, I think the person that we need to most think about this is Jesus. His birth brought with it a revelation, what you might call spiritual enlightenment, that continues to this very hour, and the design of that revelation is to waken mankind from the hypnotic spell, what we'd call in Christian Science the hypnotic spell of material existence. In other words, when I was talking about limitations that are imposed upon us and we impose upon ourselves because we're not defining ourselves in a spiritual light that which has no starting point and no conclusion. Now, our origin is always within God.
Absolutely.
But God being infinite in nature defines us in infinite terms. So we really didn't have a starting point. We've always coexisted with God. Now, with that said and done, when you think about the far-seeing vision of some of the prophets like Isaiah, that foretold and for the coming of Christ that appeared in a human form as Jesus, it's a rather remarkable occurrence, because one would say, well, you know, if Christ is come, wouldn't this produce an instantaneous light in all of mankind? But sometimes a meaningful idea isn't fully realized immediately.
Boy, no kidding.
So it's sort of like what you might call the dawning of a day. Mm-hmm. Some will notice it sooner than others, but ultimately all will waken to fully realize it. If I've got a moment here, I'd like to compare it to something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Years ago, I had the opportunity to take a whitewater rafting trip down the Colorado River in Grand Canyon. It was spectacular.
Yum.
And one morning, I woke at dawn, and light was just beginning to reveal the canyon. Now, we were way down in the canyon on a sandy beach next to the water, and its walls creeping up were purple with deep crevices casting a lot of darkened shadows, and in some places, these shadows appeared to be ominous, even threatening. But as the sun began to rise, its first rays crept over the edge of the canyon, revealing its truer colors and the formations. And by mid-morning, the beauty of the canyon was now being fully realized. The walls were red, not purple. There were several beautiful rock formations, plenty of plant life, and even some small animals scurrying around. And thinking back on that, Scout, these red walls, I guess you'd call them sort of sculptured by time and the water that had flowed through there, they dwarfed us. And they looked up, and when you saw the sky, it looked like some kind of an imposing cathedral rising up. Well, finally noon arrived, and with it came the full sunlight flooding the canyon in what I would call sort of golden light. And in that process, it erased all the shadows. And so we could easily see there was only untouched beauty all around. And I compare that to the first rays of Christ, what you might refer to as the advanced appearing of God, the full-orbed enlightenment, dawning in human thought and opening the door to an understanding of God that runs far deeper than the limitations of the material senses and traditional matter-based theology.
What a fabulous backdrop you have for this story. I love it. We've got this auditory backdrop of this illusion of physical reality. It's just exquisite timing.
Well, yeah, thank you. But what I'm finally getting to here is the result of this entire thing. Because with this dawning of the Christ, which eventually brings all of us to full noon, comes the wiping away of all tears, all sorrow, all sin, all disease, and ultimately even death. So, like the sun's rising, the full light of Christ is inevitable.
John, you have introduced so many concepts. My mind is just racing with, okay, which one do I want to go with? So I want to jump backwards a little bit to two phrases you've used. That infinite mind, that all that is, the consciousness, that which is God, realizes us. Hang on a sec. And then the hypnotic spell of material limitation. So what are you saying when you're saying that magnificent consciousness from which we all derive realizes or makes real us? And then that versus the hypnotic spell of believing as if the feedback of the five senses is all there is.
Well, you've just described Christian Science at work.
Cool.
Because that's what it's doing. It's introducing God and in an infinite light, and man as God's likeness, as the first chapter of Genesis tells us. But in that process, it challenges the limitations of material reasoning. Well, I can't do this. I don't have that. Well, this is never going to happen, and so on and so forth. All the negativity that accompanies limited thought. So it's introducing metaphysics. It's advancing thinkers beyond just what the material senses are defining and waking them to the opportunity of exercising spiritual sense.
Yes, beyond,
which perceives everything open-endedly.
Yep, metaphysics, quantum physics, and physics. Three separate areas, but
yet
they overlap deeply.
Well, physics and quantum physics are symbologies that can help guide us to metaphysics, to the ultimate reality. So everything is playing a purpose for good.
Fabulous. So I know that I've had the privilege of talking with yourself, but some amazing individuals in this Spiritual Perspectives program, and I've gotten to hear wondrous stories. It's one thing for our listeners to grasp, okay, I was in a mess where I was tracking drugs and I changed my mind. But I know you've been to testimonial meetings, and as a practitioner, you've probably witnessed. Do you have any stories or any experiences where a transformation of a physical reality was what others might label as miraculous or medicine might label as not going to really happen?
Well, yeah, a lot of them. I mean, this is probably one of the places where Christian Science is challenged most. You know, it's hard for the human mind to wrap itself around the possibility of a physical healing based on prayer.
Yes.
You know, and in today's world, there's nothing wrong with a certain amount of healthy skepticism because everybody's promising everything.
Oh, yeah. For God's sake, have a little healthy skepticism.
I think it can play a healthy role because when I came back into Christian Science, I really fought with it. I questioned it. And I more than once threw the book Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures across the room. You know, how can she say that? And I'd throw it over there, and then 20 minutes later, I'm back digging into the book and realizing, oh, this is what she meant, you know. So, but let me give my own life testimony, if I might.
Please.
Which is, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of them, Scout, that I could speak of. But one in particular comes to me. I was fooling around. And attempting to do an athletic feat, and in the process, one of my knees locked what you might call a 90-degree angle.
Oops!
I couldn't move it either way, and it was not comfortable. The pain was excruciating, and ultimately, I got help to my bed because this happened at home. And a couple of pillows were put under my leg so that it could support that angle. And for the next 2 days, I pretty much remained in bed. And I had businesses that needed attending, so ultimately it was decided to get me a wheelchair, to get me some crutches, and get me in and out of the city because we lived in Westchester at that time outside of New York.
So from that, we can definitely gather this was not just a, ooh, that hurts.
No, this was a serious challenge because I, of course, never had it diagnosed. I don't know what happened to the leg. I don't know what happened to the knee that caused it to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I couldn't move it either way.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that if I attempted to do that, not only would it hurt, but I might cause some damage.
Right.
And so I just left it as it was. But after two or three days going into work, the wheelchair became an encumbrance, and so I did the next thing. I got an elastic bandage and put it around my knee, tightened it, and it, of course, remained secure at that angle. And I just worked with the crutches over the next week or 10 days, and then eventually I began to hobble on one crutch. But during this process, some marvelous things occurred to me, and one of them had to do with my exploring more clearly what does a knee mean? What's the symbology of it? What does a knee do? Think about that just for a minute. What does a knee do?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly part of my foundation.
Bends.
Yeah.
Yeah, it bends. It has to bend for one's mobility. And it has to bend in order to kneel. And I started thinking, oh, yeah, this is taking on a greater meaning to me than initially encountering a physical problem.
Mm-hmm.
And as I began to think more frequently about this, I thought, well, a bended knee would be metaphysically to prayerfully yield to God, His presence, His supreme power. Might even mean surrendering or giving up. And in my case, I came to realize that in my day-to-day life, there was a bit too much human will in the way I was conducting my business affairs and my behavior. I think this also played out in aggressive driving habits and the occasional use of strong language and also being all too ready to confront. Well, as this began to occur to me more, two particular verses in the Bible stood out.
Mm-hmm.
As I was perusing it one day, it's from the book of Isaiah. I'm going to share them with you. They read, "Look unto me, and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is none else. I have sworn by myself, the word is gone out of my mouth in righteousness, and shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow, every tongue shall swear." Well, I felt a great rebuke from that, but I also thought, okay, I'm on the right track. And so as I allowed the tender but firm qualities of the Christ to take hold in my thinking more, and by that I mean a softening of my heart, a willingness to see good in others, to approach a conversation in a more humble tone, my temperament began to sweeten more. And I also realized that there was greater courtesy being shown on my part. So this went on for a couple of months. But little by little, I was able to not use the crutches and then eventually stop using the elastic bandage and then eventually began to walk more normally. Now, of course, I'm free to ski or play basketball with my kids or grandkids. So I'm free now. Another particular comment by Mary Baker Eddy stood out to me also, and that was this. This is from Science and Health. If truth is overcoming error in your daily walk and conversation, you can finally say, "I have fought a good fight. I have kept the faith because you are a better man."
Would you say that again? If truth
is overcoming error in your daily walk and conversation, you can finally say, "I have fought a good fight. I have kept the faith because you are a better man."
Fabulous. It's interesting. In a presentation I just did at the end of the year here, one of the phrases that came out was, "Have strength in your faith, and at the same time, faith in your strength."
Ah, it's great.
Because there is such a deep, resounding part of us. So if truth is coming more forward, perfect, fabulous. So when you're talking, John, about the hypnotic spell of material limitations, one of the places here is actually if I'm encountering a disability in my thought process, or in your case where you even had a physical injury that was limiting, I know I hear a lot of stories about kind of releasing the belief in the material world feedback being the truth and seeking that spiritual truth underneath it.
Well, I get that's one way of saying it for certain. I think in my particular situation, Christian Science is always going to define, no matter what the condition is, as a mental state. So even when there's a physical condition arguing, it's a false belief about a physical condition.
Ah.
We always attempt to keep the argument in the mental realm.
Perfect.
And that isn't always easy to do. But in the process, when we're doing this, then we're opening up the windows of our thinking to allow fresh insights to come in that we may need to learn about a particular situation.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Deeper humility, a greater exercising of unself-love, a deeper appreciation of day-to-day life, a deeper gratitude for all the good that is coming to us continually. Those are real healing factors.
Fabulous. So if we're going to talk about this being the end of 2011, which emotionally, energetically has been just an interesting challenge of a year. We're going into 2012, and I know my sense of the coming year has a whole new flavor to it. You've got a lot of ideas, John, specifically about spiritual rebirth and transforming one's own life, which doesn't necessarily mean quit your job and go be a spiritual practitioner. It doesn't necessarily mean go in and tell off your boss because they're not running their business ethically, but transforming your life, spiritual rebirth and transforming your life. So let's start with simple questions. Does that really mean throw everything else aside and I have to change all my external circumstances?
No, not at all. If I might just take a moment here to quote something that Mary Baker Eddy said, there's an article entitled The New Birth.
Nice.
It's from a book entitled Miscellaneous Writings. And she writes, the new birth is not the work of a moment. It begins with moments and goes on with years. Moments of surrender to God, of childlike trust and joyful adoption of good. Moments of self-abnegation, self-consecration, heaven-born hope, and spiritual love. That is what I would refer to as a spiritual rebirth. And actually, right here and right now, you and I and the listening audience are right now having a moment of spiritual rebirth, a new beginning of recovering our innocence, a new beginning of surrendering our own human wills to God's plan, a new beginning of learning the difference between a personal, selfish sense of love and God's unselfed love. And finally, the possibility of awakening to a larger spiritual reality that's guiding and blessing our lives. Now, I know I didn't answer that, your question, in its entirety, but I think that that's sort of the mental moral process that people are going through. And certainly at the end of the year and the beginning of the new year, we hear about New Year resolutions, about people wanting to do better with their weight or smoking or perhaps too much drinking or some moral question in their own lives that they want to have a new start at. You know, so perhaps some of what we're sharing here today will move them towards that, that will produce permanent results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get back to your original question.
Mm-hmm. Already in progress.
Okay. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more, if I might, on this process that takes place when there's a rebirth going on. You might relate it to waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes waking up can be very easy. There are times when we're ready to wake up. We've had plenty of sleep, and we can merge gently into the day. The waking is what you might call conflict-free. But there are also other times we may resist waking.
Yes.
Or forced to waken to immediate demands, such as alarm clock going off, a telephone ringing, someone nudging us, or maybe even a morning light that's almost blinding to us.
Mm-hmm.
So waking isn't always easy. I think we can agree with that.
There's a great lyric in one of the songs that I use for my workshop music, which is just, waking up can really hurt, but to stay asleep is so much worse.
That's great. That's terrific. I may have to use that. But, you know, when you talk about a spiritual awakening, sometimes what you're encountering is what we call in Christian Science a mortal or material resistance.
Yeah, and then followed by a round of self-accusation.
This happens. This absolutely happens. And you may find yourself at one point saying, well, another day, another season, another year, I'll get to it. But like my experience, Scout, and probably in yours as well, the profoundness of our encounter with truth based on some event that's taken place will not let us alone. And so it's sort of like an imposition that's requiring an entirely new way of defining ourselves. And this may give rise to weighing off our human experience some that could also include past or present conduct or behavior. So hence the battle of between right and wrong and so on and so forth. But this just to carry it forward another step, this may lead you and me or whoever it is to feelings of regret over something or even guilt over mistakes in judgment in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens, just what you were talking about, it'll be followed by a period of repentance.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully heartfelt, and seeking forgiveness from another, from ourselves, from God. But ultimately comes the final test, and that's this: reformation. A deep conviction never to repeat the same misjudgment again. Now, reformation, and this is what also you were talking about, can be followed by a major character transformation. And this may set us on a new path and in an entirely new direction that may seem odd or even disturbing to those looking on. But we must follow the truth as it unfolds. This may challenge relationships on occasion. It may challenge our job position. It may challenge certain traditional beliefs that we've been holding about ourselves or another. But truth makes its demands, but with it also comes the promise of being able to achieve this in a loving, intelligent way.
Perfect. You know, John, as we're speaking about transformation, I just want to take a second again to thank them. The First Church of Christ Science in Mill Valley has brought us our program today, as well as bringing John with us to talk to us this morning, so we really appreciate them. They just want to let you know that you can look up, if these ideas are catching your fancy, you can look up Christian Science and find a Christian Science reading room or a Christian Science church near you. And there are also articles and conversations that are archived on spirituality.com. What a great web URL to grab. But they're archived on spirituality.com and on christianscience.com. And I want to mention that our Spiritual Perspectives programs get archived on my website, lifeinsights.net, so that you can go in and download them from there, and you're welcome to even put them into your own website as long as you keep them complete. There is a shortcut to my website, which is easier to remember, and that's just notscott.com, since it's Scout, not Scott, a whole long conversation. But anyway, lifeinsights.net, we'll archive the show there. So, John, we're talking a lot about that change. And I know there was an interesting change. I have an engineering degree. I have a degree in electrical engineering. I have varied from the path slightly, but I'm still a recovering engineer. It's a one day at a time thing. But I know that there were the interesting conversations as this pathway that I'm walking now developed, where I would have to have the somewhat awkward conversations where my dad would be sweetly supportive, saying, "So, got a job yet?"
I'm familiar with those words.
And it's not always about a change of job. I mean, that's one of the pieces that I end up presenting to clients and stuff, is it's really not a matter of, there's a phrase out there of do what you love and the money will follow. I truly think that phrase is be your love and then see what opportunities follow. Because sometimes people seem to think that do what you love or live your passion or whatever means quit your job and then go figure it out. And I don't know about you, I'm not a heavy proponent of spirituality discovered through poverty as being the only available path.
Well, I agree with you. Probably best not to tear down a building unless you've got someplace else to go to sleep at night. But there is a process that goes on.
Yes.
Will cause the individual on occasion to take radical steps in saving themselves. And by that, I mean it goes beyond just preserving one's health. It also has to do with fulfilling one's purpose. And, you know, what does that imply to each person? Because each of us at different points in our lives have had inspired thoughts. That where we are really fulfilling good, that is blessing our neighbor, blessing mankind, And I don't think that there is ever harm in reaching for the stars when we're thinking along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
When you take a Bible character like Jacob, who's in the Old Testament, Jacob was, you know, he was high energy and he had his own plans. And he was going to become successful and do the whole thing. But, you know, he found out over time that human will had oftentimes misguided him. He hadn't listened closely. But it all played out for him eventually. You know, if you know the story of Jacob and Esau, and I won't go through the whole Bible story, but, you know, they were twins, and Esau was born first, so Esau had the birthright. But Jacob stole it from him. And ran off and lived a separate life with a family in a different part of the world, so to speak, and eventually came to himself, his conscience woke him, and he wanted to make friends with Esau again. And Esau himself really had hungered for a reunion. And, you know, the most incredible thing happened. They decided to meet, and I'm keeping this in very simple terms. But in the process, this is the way Scripture describes the encounter. When Jacob first saw Esau, Esau was coming at him with 400 men. And so Jacob put his wives and his children behind him, hoping to protect them. And when Esau stopped, he saw him, he dismounted the horse, and he ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. So he tore down those walls of fearful uncertainty or self-justification or self-will and let the light of Christly or divine love prevail.
Two pieces I want to touch on. One, I noticed that a lot of people get the word Jesus Christ as one word, as if that was the only repository of that which is Christ. So is that how you see that?
Well, Mrs. Eddy made an interesting discovery there. She recognized Jesus as a spiritually endowed human being mm-hmm. who had been born from a virgin. In other words, it was what Christianity refers to as an immaculate conception. And this, of course, endowed Jesus with the Christ in unlimited degree. But the Christ, as we understand it, is the spiritual idea of God. It has a lot of different interpretations, but that's basically what it is. It's the ideas that are coming from God that are defining you and me in a spiritual light. And this is what Jesus exercised continually. So there's a duality. Jesus the human, Christ the Son of God, or the spiritual idea of God. And you and I, Jesus introduced this to us, showed us how to use it through his own demonstrated healing abilities, but then declared, "These and greater works than these shall ye do, because I go unto my Father." So in a very real sense, he was prophesying for mankind that as we followed these teachings of loving God with all our heart and loving our neighbor as ourselves, that this would open up the door for us to exercise this Christ more fully and to bless others.
That was exactly the second one I was going to touch on, is it seems as if people get the notion that the ability to connect into that which is God and have it transform reality in a way that we could refer to as healing, people seem to get the idea that the window closed 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's just a sort of a literal reading of Scripture as opposed to spiritually interpreting it and opening up to today's current requirements and today's life. But the Christ is a spiritual idea, therefore it's eternal in nature. The Christ is continually coming to humankind. It's like a ray of light coming from the sun. It doesn't stop coming.
Mm-hmm.
It just is, because the sun, the power of the sun, is behind it. And so it is the power of God, infinite mind, is advancing these rays of spiritual enlightenment into the collective human consciousness, adding light to the thought continuity. By that I mean increasing the understanding, the capabilities of doing good in each person. And as you started in the beginning of this program, you said you could see so many good results going on in terms of spiritual enlightenment being practiced more fully. And look, Scout, look what's happened with right now with the Arab Spring and the demand for freedom that's going on in that part of the world. There is great evidence of good going on.
Yep. Something is happening, but we may not know what it is, do we, Mr. Jones?
There you go. You know, the Christian Science Monitor, which is a weekly review of our global news, had on its front page this week, the good news, bad news does not define the human race. And then it goes on to say, yes, somewhere in the world, militias are settling scores with AK-47s, and somewhere children are ill or hungry. But here's something you'd never guess from watching cable news. Humankind has made striking progress.
Perfect. That's just a perfect place for us to bring it to a close. John, this has been such a delightful conversation. What an honor I've had to be able to be here this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Right back at you, Scout. I hope we get another chance to do this. I feel like I've made a good friend in this.
Oh, myself as well. And I do want to invite everybody. I have numerous conversations that I've had the privilege to have. This is Scout Bartlett, and they're on my website, lifeinsights.net. Or if you Google Scout Bartlett, you'll find it. Just go to the radio page and fill your heart full. This has been Spiritual Perspectives, bringing you a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. Inviting you to join us every time there's a Fifth Friday, and then every now and then we sneak them in between. But in the same time, we thank the First Church Christ Scientist Mill Valley for bringing the program this morning, and invite you, if you like these ideas, they have that and more at any Christian Science reading room, or you can check it out on spirituality.com, christianscience.com. It's Scout Bartlett reminding you to treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly, truly are, and that no matter where on the world you are today, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose. This day-